Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 149, which is another one of my double episodes from THU 2017. Some of you may know, I went to THU and I actually was part of THU TV and recorded a bunch of podcasts there, or recorded a bunch of interviews there, and they are becoming podcasts. Quickly, the first part of the podcast, part one, is with Manny Caresco, who is an amazing artist, and we'll get into some of his work in a second. And then the second part is three people. It's going to be David Levy, Roy Robinson, and Ryan Woodward, and I'll talk a little bit about that. But Sean, you're joining me for the podcast intro today, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
All right. I have a little goal. I was telling you today that I was like, you know what? I've been looking at the podcast, and we've been sort of letting it go fairly organically, and sort of just doing a recording and moving along. And we've actually accomplished quite a bit just by doing that. We are pretty close to the top 10 podcasts ranking of all time. It's like of all the podcasts out there right now, we're sort of in the top 10, which is top 10%, yeah. Which is pretty good. But I think we can do better than that.
Yeah, we can do better.
We can do better. So I am calling on the users to go out there and help us out with this. I know a lot of you guys listen to it in your car, and so it's hard to sort of do this, but try to make a note to yourself and say, all right, when I get to work and I get on my computer, I'm going to help out the CG Garage and do a few things. The number one thing I want to do and I want to experiment with is try to get some more ratings and reviews on iTunes specifically. Because iTunes tends to be one of the biggest factors for podcasts, believe it or not. You know, did you know that it's most podcasts are listened to on iTunes, and on mobile, it's like 84% iPhones, which means it's mostly iTunes.
Okay.
I learned a lot. I've been studying this a lot. So iPhones are definitely the big podcast place to go. And so I would love to hear that. We've got a few ratings and a few reviews, but I want to get a lot more, and that's going to help us. So to incentivize you people, I'm going to actually start reading some of your reviews online or in the podcast intro to thank you for your reviews and do that. So Sean's going to help me out with this. I'm going to read the first one because it's short, and Sean's going to read the second one. Oh,
thank you so much.
All right. So the first one is by a person who's going by Incredulous Observer. And it says, this podcast is easy and entertaining way to keep up with the latest developments in the CG industry, especially in lighting and rendering. A must for anyone in the CG field. That's very nice of you.
It is.
Yes, very nice. What about the second review here we got there, Sean?
Okay, this is from J.K. Ezek. I don't know.
J.K. Ezek. Okay, yeah.
J.K. Ezek. Who says, one of the greats, 5 stars. I've been listening to this podcast since its first episode, and there hasn't been a week that I wasn't looking forward to hearing it. Chris Nichols does a fantastic job interviewing his guests. Chris.
Thank you.
There hasn't been a time when I thought I was listening to a script like a lot of other podcasts. It always seems like I was listening in on two friends talk about their lives and their work experience. It gives it that down-to-earth feel. At the same time, he isn't afraid of talking about some really difficult, controversial topics, whether that's technically, creatively, or even industrially. I wish the podcast was longer sometimes, but I understand the time constraints. Either way, I'm looking forward to future podcasts. Thanks for taking the time to record, and thanks for taking the time to write that review.
Yes, thank you.
Look how easy that is.
That is, yeah, it's so easy. I mean, so easy. All I'm asking for especially some of our loyal users, is just take 5 minutes and do this for me. Yeah. Really, it's an experiment to see what would happen. And don't be afraid to share it, right?
Yeah.
And we also, you know, you actually started this this week or last week. I have our Facebook page, as some of you know. So CG Garage Podcast. So facebook.com/CG Garage Podcast. Mm-hmm. We actually have a rating in there that you can put a rating. So go ahead and rate us there. And of course, since it is Facebook, it's also please share that page.
Yeah, exactly.
Let people know about it.
Yeah. Share, like, write a review.
Right.
Get us out there.
And also, you know, because I am asking for that, don't be afraid to give us your input. If you guys want to hear more about something or you have suggestions for guests, I've gotten some great suggestions for guests, which I have taken people up on and done. Mm-hmm. So please let us know. And if you know how to get in touch with these specific people, help me out with that as well. So I can do that. All right. So I know, sorry, it's running a little long, but I want to go through some of these guests that are on this podcast. So Manny, also known as Manu, that's how he writes, he signs his art, is a really cool artist, sort of started off as traditional animation and then get into some concept art and game art. And sort of now what he's all focused on is he went through sort of one of those moments in his life where he needed to reevaluate what he was doing and spent a lot of time outdoors. He's a big outdoor guy. He's from Texas. And he's a falconer and he, he says his hawk was his therapist. And he also, has started, amazing organization, a website called expeditionart.org, which is a nonprofit that helps bring an awareness to wildlife through art. Really fantastic stuff. And, you know, he asks for people to go to that site and contribute to it. So go check that out, expeditionart.org. And we'll have all the links on the podcast page. So make sure to go check that out. For those of you that don't know, our podcast page is now moved. It's at chaosgroup.com/CG-garage. So that's where the new podcast page is, which looks great, by the way. We've revamped it and it looked really cool. So it's a good chance for you to go check that out. Then the second part of the podcast is two old friends of ours who've actually been on the podcast before, right? Remember David Levy?
Yes. He's so nice.
He's the nicest guy. Super nice guy. And I've worked with David on Tron and a bunch of other things. He's really super, super cool. Roy Robinson, who is a really good friend of mine, really, really funny guy. And both of those guys have done some really amazing shorts that they've been trying to figure out how to get people to buy into them, et cetera, which I thought was a fantastic conversation. Now, there is a third person on this podcast, and I'm Ryan Woodward, and I'm going to tell a little funny story about this because it was sort of a mix-up when we got this podcast, when we were doing the interviews at THU, that I didn't know that he was added as another guest. So it was literally last minute, and I didn't know who Ryan Woodward was. This is the embarrassing part. He is an amazing, very famous animator and artist that I didn't know about, and I felt really awkward. And I will tell you that since we recorded this podcast, he and I have been in communication and talking a lot, and he's actually going to be – he agreed that he's going to come back and do a podcast with me, a long-form one, so we'll do a long one with him. Tell me, Sean, have you had an embarrassing story where you ran into someone and you didn't know who they were and you realized later they were very famous?
I mean, I've done that before where I've been out like at a concert or something and I see somebody and I go, how do I know that person?
This happens in LA a lot.
Yeah. This is such an LA thing. It's so basic. But yeah, you see somebody and you go, how do I know that person? Is that person... And then you're like, oh, that person's on TV. I don't know that person at
right.
all.
Right. Yeah, I've seen him on like Law and Order or something.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, and it happens like a lot. You know, 2 hours after when you're right. like, there, it's that person.
Well, I'm going to tell my story that I still am entertained by and embarrassed by. But when I first moved to LA, you're not used to that situation where you recognize, when you recognize, say, I think I know that person. After living in LA for a while, it's like, I probably seen him on TV or whatever. But I ran into someone, it was a friend of mine, he was doing these comedy skits, and I ran into this guy outside, and I said, I know this guy. But we were around a bunch of friends. So I went up to him, and I said, hey, how's it going? Good to see you again. How you been? And I was just trying to be friendly because I looked like someone I had met at a party or something. And so he goes, oh, hey, how are you? And I started chatting with him for a while. And then I went back to my wife, and I said, I don't remember where did we meet that guy? Did we meet him at like Joyce's party or something? And she goes, you're an idiot, Chris. I said, why? She says, you were just talking to Will Ferrell for like 20 minutes. It was really embarrassing. Really embarrassing. But anyway, that's basically what happened with Ryan. It's like after I saw his work, I was like, oh my God, he's incredible. He's like a storyboard artist for nearly all the Marvel movies, like the Avengers, Captain America, everything. He does incredible storyboards, but he also does beautiful, beautiful animations by hand, and he has these passion projects, and we talk about it on the podcast. And I would highly encourage you guys to go to YouTube and check out his very famous animation short that he did called A Thought of You. And it's gotten like 7 million downloads on YouTube. So it's pretty big. It's really cool. Mm-hmm. Really cool stuff. Anyway, Sean, anything else that we need to share? I think we asked quite a bit from our listeners.
Yeah, I think, yeah.
So if you guys do that, it would really, really, really help us out. And I would really love to see those reviews out there. That being said, hopefully you guys will enjoy this awesome podcast from THU 2017. Thanks, guys.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fernell.
We're here with Manny. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So this is your first THU, is that correct?
Yes, and it's been phenomenal.
Yeah.
The experience is great.
Yeah. And let's tell the viewers a little bit about yourself.
Okay. My name is Manny Carrasco. I also go by Manu.
Okay.
All my artwork is signed by Manu, so people sometimes will come up to me and say, "Hey, Manu." So I'll respond to both.
Okay.
I'm a concept artist.
Yeah.
Slash animator.
Yeah.
Started off as an animator in the early 90s. I was pretty lucky to traditionally animate.
Okay.
Went into video games, into concept, was part of a concept art studio.
Okay.
And that led to a lot of things. My career has been quite a wild path, and now I'm a co-owner with some of my older concept art colleagues of a nonprofit organization called Expedition Art.
Okay. So when you did your animation, where were you living at that time?
You know, I was living in Odessa, Texas.
Odessa?
West Texas, yes.
Yeah, I know where that is.
You know Odessa? Friday Night Lights.
Yeah.
I was living in Odessa. Through my childhood and growing up in school and high school, I was mentored by some professional artists. So when it came time to graduate, instead of going to school, I got kind of thrown into the shark tank and learned on the job.
Okay.
So I was pretty lucky, working with a fellow named Scott Shaw, who's an amazing cartoonist and mentored by Sergio Aragonés, Mad Magazine artist.
Wow, that's amazing. So what kind of animation were you doing? Were you doing traditional
animation? Yes, I started off traditionally, you know, when I moved to Los Angeles, it was culture shock to begin with.
Okay.
Going from West Texas to Los Angeles was
quite
a different jungle. But everything from, you know, I was pretty young.
Okay.
So storyboard cleanup, coloring.
Okay. And around what time was this when you moved to
I want to say probably 91.
Okay.
Okay. Give or take.
Yeah.
I don't think this
is really before anything was really digital that much at this point.
It was no digital.
Right,
I was pretty lucky. I went to Los Angeles. I stayed there for quite some time, and then just the big city got to me.
Mm-hmm.
Being really young, I kind of threw in the towel and left. Didn't tell anybody. And arrived back at my parents' place.
Yeah.
And got my stuff together. Got a lot of, you know, people telling me, you know, don't give up and don't worry about this. And even though I felt like a complete failure, like I let a lot of people down.
Right.
But it was a good journey, and it was one of the greatest educations that I could have asked for.
Right.
Not the right way to take it.
Okay.
But, you know, it was the
road that
I was
getting. Sometimes the hard lessons are the good lessons, right?
I completely agree.
Yeah.
I left there and went back to Odessa, and I was lucky enough to get a job at an ad agency.
Okay.
The ad agency that I was working for was doing some animation with an animation studio in Austin.
Okay.
And then my boss had told the animation studio owner of me and what I had done, so they nabbed me.
Oh, they grabbed you.
They grabbed me.
So you moved from Odessa to Austin.
To Austin, yeah. And then there, worked on a couple of kids' animation programs with some veteran animators from Don Bluth Studios.
Okay.
So I was really excited to learn more. Mm-hmm. More about, you know, there's a big difference with the Saturday morning animation and the feature animation. So I got to learn a lot of feature animation.
Oh, that's okay. So, that's really cool. Yeah, what kind of stuff were you doing in a feature animation?
Okay, we ended up working on Space Jam.
Oh, right.
You know, that was really neat for me because growing up loving Bugs Bunny and all of a sudden you're working on Bugs Bunny.
Uh-huh.
Not in the same context that you're used to with Avery or Chuck Jones, but it was Bugs Bunny with Michael Jordan. But,
yep.
but that led to us working on various theater releases, Prince of Egypt.
Oh, right. Okay.
Anastasia.
So you worked like on Prince of Egypt. That's a DreamWorks film, obviously.
DreamWorks,
but,
yeah.
But you were still in Austin.
I was both places. We went from Austin to, I was sent there for a while.
Okay.
I worked at DreamWorks for a bit. And it was, you know, quite an experience.
Okay.
But a lot of movies, Anastasia, Quest for Camelot, Prince of Egypt. I can't think off the top of my head, you know, other...
And what were you doing? Were you doing traditional animation?
Yeah, traditional. Okay. So I was really lucky. I felt that I just landed at a time where, you know, animators now, it's mostly all digital, right?
Right.
So it was nice to experience, you know, Glenn Keane being one of my absolute heroes growing up.
Mm-hmm.
It was nice to experience working on paper and all the correct way to do it, because as a kid you don't know any better, and you do these little spaceship wars on pads and you flip it and you wonder why you run out of paper and you finish the war so you continue onto another notepad.
Right.
So it was quite a nice route to get.
Yeah. Well, I think that's really awesome that we still had obviously a lot of that foundation in traditional animation, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of people need to understand that.
Yeah.
Did you actually move to digital animation at some point too?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
The traditional animation sort of hit bottom a little bit. You know, we had some guys from Lion King, I remember, that had worked at Disney, and work was not as good as it was before. So I had to move on.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily enough, up the street from where the studio was located, we had a video game company there called Acclaim.
Okay, yes.
They did the first Turok, the Dinosaur Hunter.
Right.
And I came in at the tail end of that.
Okay.
And I got hired on the basis of my traditional animation.
Okay.
The guy said, no, your fundamentals and your basics are there. We can make you go into the 3D realm pretty easy. So I got thrown into Power Animator and...
Oh, and Alias Wavefront and Max, So what, tell us about this, there must have been some struggle.
Yes, and I'll tell you what I did. I told in my talk yesterday, I talked about, you know, they sat me down and they gave me like a month of teaching me how to animate with keyframes and the skeleton of the, in the computer. And I remember I wasn't the modeler, so I would be handed, for example, I'd get handed one of Turok's enemies or something, and I would... use a dry erase marker to draw my screen, the key poses, and then pose that character into that.
Wow.
Erase it, go to the next one. Of course, in 3D, you're looking at the camera being all around you, right? So I'm animating
for a single frame.
On a single flat. So then I had to turn the character around and then fix what I needed to fix. But that was the way I started, it was quite a bit. The handles of the, you know, the skeleton.
But I think that's a brilliant way because you're overlaying what you need to do. I've heard of some traditional animators who went to 3D.
I'm not the only.
When they tried to animate a character moving forward, they would scale them up.
Oh yeah. So, you know, and it worked.
Like, wait, it moves and it can actually move in the right direction.
It worked. No, you know, at the point that at that time there was no squash and stretch in the skeletons, so I had to make do with what I had.
Right.
But it worked. I think, you know, I ended up becoming a concept artist during one of the games.
Okay.
Because just the concepts that were coming in, I thought they weren't bad, but I thought we could add to this. So I started sort of drawing on the side, and I always thought I was going to be a comic book artist.
Really?
Growing up. Yeah, I never thought I'd be in animation, and so I would fix things and hand them back, and they liked it more, and... Before you know it, they're handing me all of the characters, and I'm, redoing all the characters.
Redoing all the characters.
So now, like, I have a schedule that's just loaded with just concepting. And then right. they said, you know what? Just focus on these concepts.
And this was still at Acclaim, right?
This was still at Acclaim, right. Yeah. I think this was, like, the third Turok or something, second okay. Turok, I believe. Animated on the second Turok, and I can't remember if the third Turok I was the concept artist there.
Interesting, yeah.
And at the time, there wasn't really a concept department, per se, on the in the companies, if I remember right.
Okay.
Not at Acclaim, at least, so... another friend of mine by the name of David Levy, who's here also as a guest.
Oh, I know David.
You know David, yeah.
Yeah.
David and I worked with David at his very first job in when he moved to Austin.
Oh, really?
So we just talked about it right a while ago. I guess it's 18 years ago.
Oh, wow. So. Yeah, David and I are good friends. He and I worked together on Tron Legacy, actually.
Okay, yeah, sure.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, we, you know, David...
I remember he was in Austin as well. Yeah, that's right.
And, you know, and that's where I met David 18 years ago. Okay. He came in and then... the concepting started, and yep. you know, another guy named Thierry Doison mm-hmm. was there, and we discovered Sparth and all the different, you know, digital artists, and mm-hmm. the forums were new back then.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So everybody's exchanging all this information, and we became the first art department or concept department there at Acclaim.
Okay, that's
so,
awesome.
You know,
yeah.
So.
Well, that's cool. So where did it go from there?
Well, it went from there. Let's see. We started, Acclaim went belly up.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Bad.
Yeah.
I had to keep, you know, I think the bank people kept feeding my fish. I had an aquarium there. And they wouldn't let us in. And
Wow. They literally just closed the doors.
Yeah, literally. They, you know, we couldn't get anything. I didn't have my, at that time, the tower had it, you know, there was no thumb drives or whatever.
Right, right.
I guess it was external drives, but all my work was stuck in there and nobody's got work. And I ended up finding some jobs because people knew me,
mm-hmm.
and I think David left. He was smart. He read the writing on the wall.
Yeah,
I stayed there to the very end, but I ended up getting some jobs. I believe the comic book artist Joe Mad Herrera. I sent my portfolio in. People, you know, Austin was small enough at that time, the community, that people knew each other.
Right,
and I was like, well, this is all I have. My stuff is. And Acclaim locked right. up, and they were like, "Well, we'll hire you." And I worked as a freelance mostly.
Okay.
NCSoft, Ubisoft.
Right.
And then we started Steambot Studios.
Okay.
And you know, that was a whole different journey, I would say.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, can you tell a little bit about the journey?
Sure. I mean, myself and David and Thierry are very close.
Mm-hmm.
We're very best friends. David had moved along with Thierry to Montreal, I believe, and they actually officially started Steambot out there.
Okay.
I became, myself and our producer at Acclaim, who's right. our friend of ours, also Christy Tipton, became Steambot Studios US. David moved to Los Angeles, right. so he was part of us.
Yep.
So Steambot was Montreal, Austin, and Los Angeles.
But just a few people scattered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and right. we took on a lot of contracts and a lot of work, and then things happened, and we moved on.
Okay.
I was loyal to David because he's my friend and like a brother to me. And
right.
Thierry had left early on, so we kind of disbanded.
Mm-hmm.
And that led to hard times.
Yeah.
I mean, you know David, and I'm not sure if you knew David when he was with part of Steambot or not, but
right.
it was tough. It was yeah. a tough thing that you put so much effort into things, and they don't happen to work. But yeah. out of all that fire, new growth happens.
Yeah, of course.
So,
yeah, and he survived. And
he survived. I've survived. Christy, Thierry, we've all moved. But that led to some amazing conversations between David and I.
Okay.
Calling David one day and saying, David was busy, whether mm-hmm. it was with Tron or Prometheus, I can't remember. But
I think Tron was one of his first ones that he worked on.
Okay, yeah. I'm not sure exactly. Movie-wise for David, when these events happened, but I found myself a little lost. I got some work, some freelance work, and then I got hired by a studio that I felt they pay really well, but my growth as an artist was just like plummeting.
Right.
And David and I stayed in contact. We all did.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm an outdoor person.
Yeah.
I have a lot of, you know, my upbringing and the things that I do for fun, my hobbies are unique. I'm a falconer.
Falconer, yes.
Yeah, I trained.
You love birds, raptors?
Raptors. I'm a raptor nut since the fourth grade. A book called My Side of the Mountain. That was read to us, and that changed my life. And
so you have falcons?
I have a hawk. Yeah, I've had hawks. Yeah, I've been doing this for over 20 years now, I believe.
Right.
And I've always loved animals.
Sure.
You know, a mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom.
Uh-huh.
As a kid, and all the documentaries on lions and things just got me. That helped build who I was as an animator as well, and as an artist. So,
well, your art is very much about nature in a lot of ways.
Now it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now it is, and that's been my therapy. When our studio went belly up, our personal studio, I turned back to nature.
Right.
I turned back to, you know, if it wasn't for falconry, I would have gone nuts. My hawk was my therapist.
Wow.
So nature and conversations with David are like, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do, David. You know, I turned to hiking, to being outdoors, and I noticed I was drawing more outside.
Right.
You know, again, paying attention to animals, to trees, to rocks, to environments. And I said, we should start a blog.
Interesting, yeah.
And that blog led to other things and to forming this nonprofit that we have.
So tell me about the blog and about your nonprofit.
Okay. The blog. First of all, you know, the idea was, I said, you know what? I think this is, and this was just more therapeutic for myself. You know, David was busy with Prometheus or Tron. I can't remember which one, to be honest. But I thought, I'm going to start a blog where I write about going back outside and drawing.
Right.
You know, not necessarily. Well, I mean, it could be plein air painting. And as you know, for me, it was just observing and drawing creeks and drawing great horned owls when you find them.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing. And I said, let's start this blog, and we'll review hiking shoes and backpacks and which is the best sketchbook to take outside. And
right.
You know, what little kits do we make to go outside? And they said, yeah, let's do that. Let's call it, and we're sitting there, David and I, changing names, and let's call it Art Explorers. So we were Art Explorers for a bit. So we, you know, that's what we were calling the blog. A couple of months later, the Noman School, one of our friends that was working at Noman School had a friend that was working at a nature center in Los Angeles.
Okay.
And they were having some problems with some marine life. I got the call from this friend of ours, and he said, you're sort of the animal guy. Everybody, because I post a lot of craziness when I'm out in Africa or when I'm out in with my bird or whatever it may be.
Right.
And he says, and we're trying to help this center, and everybody thought about you, so can you help us put this together, maybe through Art Explorers?
Right.
Which people thought it was, you know, people couldn't. At first, Art Explorers, they didn't know if Art Explorers was a new studio since Steamboat had
gone
down.
So they thought it was just...
Yeah, it's Thierry, Christie, David, Levy, myself.
Right.
It's a concept art studio.
Right.
And I kind of explained to him what it was. We gathered as many artists as we could to help for this cause. And David did a small film. And we reached our colleagues for this event, and it was put on. We called it Animal, I believe, and it was put on by Noman and Art Explorers, and we raised some money for the marine problems that they were having. I believe it was with baby seals and stuff. I can't remember exactly, and we realized that we sort of had something. You know, as we talked about it, Terrell Whitlatch joined us, Aaron Blaze joined us. Recently, Ian McKeag.
Oh, yeah.
And we had this group of artists that are well respected and love nature and love, you know, it's all kind of like minds.
Right.
Not to say that other artists don't, but you know, we couldn't keep Art Explorers because I think it was taken when we tried to take the name for our, and it was like I think it was a older ladies at you know. quilt or something. So we couldn't take. So we became Expedition Art. And then legitimately our producer and the brain of our whole thing took our name and became an official 501c3, which is a nonprofit.
Mm-hmm. And so through this nonprofit, obviously you're still writing blogs on there as well, right?
Yes, we are. Yeah, we need to be. Now we're not under Art Explorers. We had to change the whole blog to Expedition Art, and we've linked it. And we got our website and some of the projects that I've worked on. And
but you also raise money in this area.
Yes, we do. So where I've kind of caught the attention, I think, of people. Everything, like I said, out of this fire that happened, new growth happened, and more growth and more growth, and all of a sudden there's this forest, which is Expedition Art.
Right.
I go to my brother-in-law knows how much I love animals, and he is a real estate businessman in Austin, and he called me one time for lunch and said, "Hey, so I have this idea, and I thought of you immediately. How would you like to go work with rhinos in Africa, in Zimbabwe?"
Wow.
And, I mean, that's a given. You know, growing up at the ranch with animals and always observing animals and tracking and everything that I've done, that was a no-brainer.
Right.
So we went, not officially as Expedition Art, but I went to volunteer out there and met some people out there, a couple of veterinarians that have their own nonprofit in Zimbabwe.
Right.
Zimbabwe isn't the richest country in the world.
Nope.
They used to work for the government, and when they lost their jobs, this is what I remember. When they lost their jobs, they felt a responsibility to what they were doing before.
Right.
So they went ahead and started the nonprofit and continued the work with the rhinos to. Mm-hmm. Because of the poaching that goes on.
Right, of course.
Most of the rhinos had been moved into national parks. And what we do there is we go there with them and dehorn them.
Right.
Which is a whole different, something. It was all new to me, all exciting, of course. Because and I didn't go alone. My brother ended up going with me and my sister. And we went to the first rhino dehorning, and then I thought more about how we could help through Expedition Art and not just the rhino organization there, but just in general, right?
Mm-hmm.
I found that using art as an educational tool was phenomenal.
Right.
Like, it's louder than words.
Yeah, that's so great. Well, I love the fact that you've been able to take art and you've been able to take it and channel it in. Is there other people that you're looking for to try to...
Oh, yes. Yes. What's happened now is I've been to Zimbabwe a couple of more times. One time working with dogs in villages to stop the spread of parvo and rabies into the wildlife there, which are this, I guess, the spotted, the African wild dogs and the lions. So we go and do all these vaccination clinics and spay and neuter. Things, but I've been back for the rhino stuff again. This time I did go as Expedition Art, and we did take some things to the rangers, and we got an event that was held at the Sundance Festival, and we raised $25,000 for rhino conservation efforts.
Awesome.
And we were just put a book together.
Okay.
And it's in print now. It's being worked out. I reached out to more colleagues.
Yep.
Between myself, Aaron Blaze, David, Thierry, Ian McKeag, that sort of made us a little bit more legit, and people like Bobby Chu, Carla Ortiz, Alexi.
Yeah.
Just the amount of the response that we got, Claire Wendling.
Yeah.
Our covers, drawn by Kim Jung Ji.
Oh, wow. Really?
And, our first project is, we call it In Danger.
Okay.
It's 100 threatened and endangered species.
Okay.
And 58 artists from, I can't remember how many different countries.
Right.
And it's being published by Imagination International, which is the company that Terrell works for.
Right.
So, and as far as other artists joining, yes, expeditionart.org.
There you go. That's what I was going to ask you specifically.
Send art. I mean, it's amazing now that we're sort of getting our name out there more, mm-hmm. and people are realizing what we're doing. People want to contribute more.
Right.
We want to be fair. The proceeds do go to different other nonprofits that we pick, we select.
Right.
This book is going to savingspecies.org.
Okay.
Which buy land and connect these corridors of this specifically this project is for orangutans and tigers in Sumatra.
Okay.
And I may be going there in January.
Oh, wonderful.
To speak with them.
Well, this is so cool that you're able to take two of your passions and put them together and travel the world to do it.
Exactly, and it's opened doors. I mean, both falconry and art have just sort of blended together, and then wildlife. So it's come full circle.
Right.
Really, strangely.
Well, great. We have to cut the time short, unfortunately, but I would love to keep talking to you. We have all week, so we're going to have a great time together,
yeah,
I'm sure.
No problem.
But thanks so much for doing this, man. Yeah,
thank you for having me. Thank you for having me.
That's the end of part one of the podcast with Manny, and now we're going on to part two with David Levy, Roy Robinson, and Ryan Woodward. Thanks, guys.
I am back here with my good friend Rory, my great friend Ryan, and my good friend David. And we're going to talk, we're joking a little bit because unfortunately it was a little bit of a mix-up and we didn't realize that Ryan was going to be here, but we decided, hey, let's all get together like a big family and let's discuss the subject that we want to talk about. So Rory and David I've known for a long time. I actually really have not met you until today, but one of the things that I wanted to discuss a little bit today is they went out there and they made their independent films, and turns out you've also done some short films as well. And they've used those films. This is a new thing that I've not a new thing, but a thing that I've seen that's starting to happen is they've been able to take these short films as a means, as a vehicle, as a teaser to pitch larger ideas to studios, right? So why don't you tell them a little bit, Rory, about one of the things that the first time that I sort of met you as you started working on that short film.
I made a short film called Leviathan, which was a science fiction version of Moby Dick, and it was a pitch for a feature film, which is about involuntary labor being used on an off-world colony to hunt these giant alien beasts that have negative energy density mass in their bloodstream that is harvested, which makes them able to travel to other worlds using. Sorry, I'm blanking here because I'm a little hungover. But anyway, it's a 3.5 minute short film, and it's all CGI, and there's a bunch of motion capture people in it, and vehicles, and giant landscapes, and it's a bunch of action and monsters.
Yeah.
And I like monsters, so I've been wanting to make monster movies for a long time, and this is like for me, is a nice way to tell a story that I think is really really powerful, in a new context that kind of, it's like the medicine, it's the sugar with your medicine, because it's like an old classic piece of literature that's a great story, but feels a bit old and stuffy, and it's a way of kind of telling a version of that it is wrapped in shiny new clothes.
Right.
And so it's sold to Fox, and Simon Kinberg and Neil Blomkamp are attached as producers, and we're working on the script.
You've been working on the script, yeah. And so what I think is really cool about it is that, and we'll get back to you in a second, but you were able to basically say, all right, with some much more basic tools than people had in the past, things like the DSLR camera, which I want to talk to you about, David, and just, you know, your knowledge of CG, you're able to get a very high production value for a much lower cost, extremely independently. So independent filmmaking used to be, I remember watching some old John Waters films when he would make films, and, you know, they're great, but they were really rough in terms of how they look. But by yourself at a low budget, you're able to do something really great. Tell us a little bit about Plug and about how that got made.
So Plug was designed to be a pilot for a TV series.
Right.
It's a 15-minute short film. It's about the last person on Earth who's a young female protagonist. And we started it, it was supposed to be a 1-minute short film. It turned into a 15-minute short film. And it was supposed to be done in 2 months. And it was done in 4 years. So the short film, we have a script for the whole feature, our series. And we have not sold it, but we sold the short film to a company that takes distribution to TV. So it will be on TV, and we will not be online anymore soon.
Right.
So if you haven't seen it, go watch it. but we're still looking for a place for the whole story to land, basically.
Okay. And Ryan, obviously, I know there's a bit of a mix-up here, but I know that you've actually, you mentioned that you've done some short films as well. So tell me a little bit about some of the work that you've got on short films.
Well, it's the objective is from the films that I've made are a little bit different than I think from the general topic here.
Okay.
Because they're more of a personal adventure sort of thing. I didn't make any of them to sell to a studio or to
sure.
to push, you know, an idea or something like that. They were basically passion projects, you know, that when they were finished, that was my reward, the process.
The process.
Yeah.
Well, tell me a little bit about some of the films that you've done that you're proud of and you want to be able to share with people.
Yeah, the one that I think most people that know me have seen is a short film called Thought of You.
Oh, okay.
And it's a 2D dance film with two dancers, and it's all hand-drawn, and I had to use a lot of interesting, cool tricks and tips, you know, to get it actually to end up as a short film, because you can't exactly, they're like animated figure drawings, you know, so you can't really flip paper without a big sheet, so
right. I figured out how to do it. Right, so what did you do? What were some of the tricks that you used?
I animated it digitally, but I had to animate each character with four different layers, and then in After Effects, I would composite those layers so that they each had different filters put on them, so it felt like a figure drawing.
Oh, okay. Well, that sounds pretty cool. That's a really amazing thing.
Yeah, I mean, if I add it up, it's like over 20,000 drawings.
Jesus, 20,000 drawings?
Yeah.
Wow. And then the compositing must have been really kind of pretty elaborate as well.
Yeah.
How long is the short?
It's 3 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah.
How long does it take to do 20,000 drawings?
Yeah, it took a long time. It took a long time. But, I mean, these are also drawings that once you get into that groove, it's just,
right.
you know, one every, like, 20 seconds, you know, or something.
If you're an animator, yes.
Yeah. yeah.
And that's is that your background, is animation as well?
Uh-huh. Animation and storyboards.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
And where do you work? Do you work at a specific studio, or are you independent, or...?
Yeah, and right now I'm at Riot Games.
Okay. Oh, right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Prior to that, I was working as a board artist on live-action films, most of the Marvel movies. And
oh, okay. That's awesome. And I know you guys background a little bit, but you should probably remind people. David, you recently just left the industry, right?
Sort of.
Let's just call it sort of.
It's not like I'm dead yet, but...
No. All right, he's dead to us. No. But go ahead, David. You've got an interesting story that you've done recently.
Yes. Which part?
Why you moved to North Carolina?
Oh, why I moved? Oh, yeah. So yeah, 4 weeks ago, I decided to move with my family to North Carolina.
Yeah.
You decided 4 weeks ago, or
no? We actually moved 4 weeks ago to North Carolina. So I lived for the last 10 years in LA. So I've been in the entertainment industry for 25 years now, and I think I've seen a lot, and I love LA. I love working in LA, but. I now have two little girls, mm-hmm. and I don't want to go too far into details, but something very tragic happened to my family in December, and which made us reconsider. And I've realized that life is very short, you know, and that you should use every minute of it in order to be with the people you love. So I decided to start working freelance from North Carolina in a place that's beautiful and with beautiful trees and with my family and my girls running around in the backyard.
Right.
And hopefully I can make a living like that. But the goal would be from now on to work and hopefully direct short film in the future, but located in North Carolina now.
And before you did Plug, you did a lot of concept art, right? So that
yes.
was one of the works. And that was the first time that I met you, as you and I actually sat next to each other when we worked on Tron.
That's correct.
And I was a visual effects guy. It was the first time we've ever done this, where as a visual effects guy and a concept artist, we're actually sitting next to each other, exchanging ideas and files, working very directly for months and months at a time. So we got that light bike sequence looking beautiful that way, right?
Completely. And to go into that direction, to still today... That was probably the best work experience in my whole life.
Right.
And that project really just I still, when I think about it, I'm so happy.
Yeah.
You know, and so, and being part of the VFX department was just amazing. It really changed my view on everything.
Yeah, it's as it did mine. I think they really should reconsider bringing art departments and concept artists and even storyboarders and combine them much more directly with the people that actually are creating the frames that are out there, instead of just, I used to just get handed a things like, here, just make this. And it's like, yeah. Okay, why can't we discuss this a little bit? But you've actually been a director for a long time and done a lot of direction. I love all of your shorts. There's other shorts that people should watch as well besides Leviathan that you did. What's the one with the robot, of course?
Blinky.
I love Blinky.
I made quite a few shorts now. I made a short in college called A House on Dame Street, which was, I did graphic design in college, so I had to justify it as a graphic design project. So it's got a full feature-length title sequence at the beginning, which is all typography,
right.
And a full feature-length title sequence at the end, which is all typography.
Right.
And a very, very short film between those. But once you've made your own film, it's kind of hard to become, you know, toenail texture artist 427.
Right.
Taking orders from honestly, a lot of the times, directors who haven't a fucking clue what they're doing.
Right.
And so once you get the book to do your own films, it's, you're kind of like, all right, that's what I want to do the rest
right.
of my life. And I did have to, I did a previous career working in commercials as a 3D generalist and compositor for about a decade, but in between I would do short films, and so I did a short film around 2001 called 50% Grey, which got nominated for an Oscar. I guess it was a bad year for animation, and 50% Grey, which was a sort of like a short film about this guy in hell.
Oh, yeah.
Repeatedly trying to blow his brains out to escape out of hell, which was funny, I swear.
It was pretty funny. It was dark. It was very dark, but it was pretty funny. And Blinky's pretty dark as well.
Yeah, so. They are.
So I think there's a lot of interesting things about it.
It's like this thing where I don't go to therapy, but making films is my therapy for the experience of the previous one.
Right. But let's talk a little bit about some of your other experiences. Your short that you made, what was the name of the short again?
Thought of You. Yeah.
Are most of them animation, traditional animations?
Yeah.
Okay. And you could use the same method for all your other shorts as well?
Oh, no. Once I experiment and find a method and do it, then that's it.
That's the experiment. It's over.
Yeah, then I'm looking for the next creative thing that I don't know how to do.
Right. And so tell us about some of those.
After I made Thought of You, I was trying to figure out the next, like, passion project that I want to dive into, and I decided I like comic books, I like animation, so let's put it together, and I made an animated comic app that I had no idea how to do in the beginning. I had no idea how to make an app, but that was the thrill, you know, doing something that I have no idea how to do, but working through it.
What did you pick up when you just picked up a copy of Unity or something and started working in there? Or?
Well, I had hired some guys to help in some of those areas, but I realized some limitations. You know, I picked up some coding and started to do that, and then I said, this is like Japanese. You know, I can't do this.
My brain does not work in code.
No, me either.
I had to hire some guys to help me with that part of it, but the actual whole process of and all the limitations of getting an app together, you know, depending on the platform you're using and the business side of it too.
So
it's really exhilarating.
A comic that is presented as an app, or is it an app that lets you make comics?
It's a comic on the iPad, but when you touch the panels, they animate.
Oh, cool! Yeah, awesome.
They come alive. And
so you just buy the app and
what's it called?
That's awesome.
Bottom of the Ninth.
Can I get it on my
bottom
iPhone?
Of the Ninth?
Yeah,
cool.
Bottom of the Ninth.
I get it now.
So it's an interactive comic book animation app.
Yeah.
And you turn pages on it as well?
Yeah.
Okay.
That sounds awesome.
That does sound pretty cool. And how long did that take you through the process of doing it?
6 months.
6 months, okay.
Yeah.
That's not bad. Do you see the updated? Sorry, I'm taking you off spot now.
Yeah.
No, you can talk.
Let's
all have a conversation.
It wiped me out.
I think we could all.
Yeah, I think there's
one
common point. One common point between the three of us.
Yeah. It was so bad. I finished it and like went to bed for a month. You know, I was so wiped out. I dropped like 40 pounds making it. I was so It was.
He broke his tooth on a strawberry, for God's sake.
See, there you go.
You don't remember that?
Oh, God, yeah. I don't know.
He got a text from you about something, and I was like, I had a crappy day. I broke my tooth on a strawberry. It's like, how is that possible?
I'm fucking decaying here in real time, man. It's really bad. It's like, you don't take care of yourself when you do this stuff.
No, you don't.
Like, I Leviathan, I was doing 16-hour days every day for a year. I think I had, like, 2 days off in the whole year. And by the end of it, you're like a fucking mess.
Right.
Can I curse? I
don't know. Okay.
Whatever.
Well, we'll figure
out. But you're a puddle. You're just like crawling. Go like, oh, okay, yeah. That's what it's like during the daytime.
Right. No, I know. It's really, really hard when you've got.
And when you're done, that's when you're expected to be totally on it because you're in sales mode.
Right.
You finished the project, but you're selling it. You're now selling it, so you're supposed to be the most together ever, and you're supposed to be
when you guys are actually trying to sell their
and I'm like,
products.
Okay, what's going on?
I agree.
It's really good, I swear.
When you are the most depressed because you finished the short film,
right,
and you have zero perspective on it, zero. You don't even know if it's good, if it's crap. You have no idea. Then that's at that point that you're supposed to be shopping it around.
And you're supposed
Ryan
to have that
to
plus
that.
The next
know,
thing ready
you did
as
sell
well, too.
That's correct.
Right. Yeah.
You did sell your app, right?
For a few weeks, and then I just made it free.
Okay. Did you make some good money on it?
No.
No,
I didn't. I like I said, when I was done, I didn't have anything left in me to do any marketing or anything like that.
Right.
I mean, Apple put it on there, like what's hot and all that kind of stuff. So it got it did okay, but I realized that it's better if I just make it free and then let it get out there and see how it goes from there, because it really was a passion project.
Right.
But yeah, no, I didn't set me up for the next one that or anything like that.
Right. Well, I think it's interesting that you use definitely, you know, you learned some new tools, you figured out a new thing, you try to invent a new medium, right? So
yeah,
that's kind of awesome to think about it. And you use specifically the iPad as an idea, as like, I'm going to make this happen and I can combine both things and this is a way for me to do it.
Yeah.
So really, really cool. Now, Rory, what's interesting about your story is that it looks so sleek and perfect. Every time people look at it, it's like, wow, that's amazing. But then when you talk about it, it's like, I hacked the crap out of this thing to make it work. But you did manage to do that, a really good job on it. And
I can't animate very well, and it's all animation.
Right.
Which presents something of a challenge.
Right.
So what I did was, you know, there's all these aerial sequences with vehicles and the creatures and stuff like that. And,
but you can move you can frame a really good camera.
I know how to animate a camera. I know how to sequence pretty well. So I used that as my crutch to kind of back into shots that, you know, I would rather than traditionally choreographing it shot by shot, and animating each shot perfectly, I would choreograph the whole sequence roughly,
mm-hmm.
and then have 12 cameras that record the event like they are vehicle-to-vehicle air photography.
Right.
And then I would have 12 long takes from multiple angles, and
right.
I would intercut those and find the angles that look good for this bit of animation,
okay.
and hide the bad animation from this angle, and... and then keep on bouncing back and forth and refining the animation and refining the camera work.
So you basically cut before it looked crappy, is basically.
Yeah. And then even still, I would do stuff like if it's set on a gas giant, so there's clouds everywhere. And if in doubt, I would just have it pass by clouds at the moment. The textures didn't hold up because the camera was too close to that part of the body of the creature or something
right.
like that. Or the vehicles, the textures didn't look good, or there was like a ugly looking highlight on it or something like that. Just more clouds,
right.
hide everything.
Yeah, but it's really cool. And I think when, you know, you had told me about the short in the very beginning, and even showed me the early concept drawings and storyboards, and then suddenly,
did you
like,
think I was ever going to finish it?
I didn't think so. I didn't think that was possible, but it was like, suddenly I was like, huh, it's been over a year. And then all of a sudden, oh my God, it's done. It's amazing.
You go into burn mode, the final stretch of a project, which is usually the last 2 weeks or whatever,
right.
where you just don't sleep that much.
Right.
The whole project was like that because there was no deadline except for my bank balance emptying.
Right.
So I had to kind of like race through every step of it
right.
from the start. Like right. The start was a race, and it stayed in burn mode the whole way through, which is exhausting, to be honest.
Yeah, it's really amazing, and I remember that. And I remember actually, David, you and I, when we were at DD, that was the first time that you got an SLR camera, and that's when you're like, I want to do something with this, because SLRs were basically suddenly could do film, and it's like, I want to be able to film off of this thing, and that was your inspiration.
Yes, I mean, doing that short film, I had done smaller short films at the time I was living in Austin, Texas, and I used a 16mm Bolex, you know, and it was such a freaking pain in the bottom, right. You know, that I thought, my God, I love making movies, but those cameras are really not user-friendly, you know. And as soon as I saw the 70 announced, I thought, okay, now I have no excuse.
Right.
So as soon as he came out, I bought it, and I said, okay, now I've got to shoot something with it. You know?
See, so. I like shooting on film, man.
Well, I mean, it depends. If you have a team to shoot with film, great.
Yeah, yeah.
By yourself, it's not fun at all.
Yeah,
no, it's very, very painful to do that, for sure. So can you tell us a little bit about some of your work that you do, you know, besides your independent work? I'd like to know a little bit more about stuff that you did, the storyboards you did over at Marvel and stuff like that. What are some of the projects you've worked on?
I mean, pretty much all of the Marvel movies.
Okay.
You know, all the, you know, Iron Man, Captain America, and Thor.
Awesome.
And all those, been a part of making those. Really great working with those directors. You know, and on my end in pre-production, you know, I'm not as heavily involved in the technology at that point, but I have to be very conscious of the shots that I'm boarding,
right.
Knowing that there's a crew that's going to go out to shoot it and looking at the schedule, and they only have 2 days in this one location, so I got to limit my shots and setups to 24 or something like that.
Right.
I got to be very, very conscious of that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great to hear that you actually have to think about the process of the filmmaking beyond just like, this looks nice.
And well, it's because I got ripped apart on one film because I gave him too many setups
to
do, and the first AD came to me screaming and yelling, and so I'm like, lesson learned.
Okay, wow. That's
interesting. That's one thing that we don't have to worry about in concept art. Usually, once we're done, you know, people are like, oh yeah, we're gone already anyway. Yeah. No one can scream at us.
No, well, you weren't gone. That was the thing that I liked about it on Tron. You was that you stuck around, and that helped a lot. That helped the process, and it worked really well. Okay, we're sort of wrapping up around here. We're sort of going on the home stretch. So what would be great is for people to know more about where they can find more of your work and what kind of stuff that you can show them. So let's go down this way. So, David.
So to watch my short film, it's on Vimeo. It's called Plug, P-L-U-G.
And people better do it soon because you're going
to... It's going to be gone soon. Yep. So go watch it and like it, please. or if you don't tell me. so if you type Plug short film on Google, it's the first one that comes up. So please have a look.
Yeah, that's great. And then what about other work that you've done? Do you have a website that people can
go to? Yeah, when it comes to concept art, I worked in movies for the last 10, 11 years.
Right.
So I worked on Prometheus and Tron Legacy and Ender's Game. And
right.
So if you want to see that work, go to my website, which is vileart.com,
VYLE-ART.com. Okay. Awesome. Well, thanks so much, David.
Thanks.
What about you, Ryan? Where can people find out more information about you?
I have a website. It's just ryanwoodwardart.com.
Okay.
And on the homepage there's a piece that Riot released about a month ago that's that I 2D animated the whole thing, and it's called Zed, and he's just slashing people up like crazy. It's fight porn, but it was crazy fun to draw, and you know, like,
okay, you know. Well, that's awesome. And then your short, people can check that out as well.
Yeah, that's all that stuff's through my website.
Through your website, okay, yeah. Including your app as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's really cool. So make sure to go to Ryan Woodward Art, right?
Yep. Perfect. Thank you.
What about you?
You can see Leviathan and Blanky on my Vimeo page.
Uh-huh.
And my website is RoryRobinson.com. Spelt the way my name is spelt, which I'm not going to put you through now.
Well,
but if you can put a link,
Rory,
on the screen,
are you,
right here.
Are you a... No, wait. Are you I...
Exactly. This is the problem.
Damn it. My dyslexia does not help this situation.
Or you A-I or I... RoryRobinson.com.
There you go.
RoryRobinson.com. Yeah.
Look up Leviathan, you'll get the spelling pretty good.
Yeah.
But that's really cool. I also really like some of your old shorts too. That was really not your old commercials, like the one with the dinosaur thingy.
Oh, the caveman and the dinosaur, the milk ads.
Caveman and dinosaur milk shorts are awesome. A lot of fun.
Thank you.
So anyway, thanks so much, guys.
That was the first thing I ever did in V-Ray, actually.
Really?
Yeah, that was when I switched to V-Ray back in, was it 2004,
wow, the early days.
Yeah. 1.5.
Cool. All right, well, thanks so much, guys. I appreciate it, and thank you for being here.